I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Not only has this pandemic hit the arts hard in general, but the creative output of individual artists has suffered tremendously. Today, the survey that revealed just how many creative talents were unable to practice their respective art, and as a result, weren't making a living either. We'll ask what assistance is available to them and how artists can recover as we move out of the shadow of COVID-19. Then it's going to be a different kind of award ceremony on Sunday when the Oscars get handed out. The film critics are here to look at the challenges and opportunities the pandemic has provided the film industry, and we'll get their picks for who will take home those golden statuettes. We'll get you up to date after the news. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Artists are hurting. That may come as no surprise, particularly in the wake of a pandemic that has lasted for more than a year. COVID-19 has done more than take money out of the pockets of artists. It's also robbed many of their creative output. Nearly 60% of artists surveyed in the Midwest said they had experienced a decrease in their production. Now, a look at what else that survey tells us about the struggles that artists have endured and what the path forward to recovery could look like. With us is Kathy Liao. She's a program specialist with Artist Inc. that works with artists on their professional development. Kathy, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you so much for having me here this morning.
You know, your survey is just out and you checked 438 artists throughout the Midwest. What's the chief takeaway here, Kathy? What did you find?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Steve. So we did survey. The survey had around 438 respondents from around the country, but about 88% is from this region. So it's very specific for artists that's in Kansas and Missouri and in the region from Nebraska all the way down to Texas. Some of the major takeaway is, as we all know, the arts and creative sector has been one of the hardest hit industries by the pandemic. And thinking back to kind of the methodology of the survey, we were serving artists back in March 2020 when the pandemic first started, and we surveyed them again in May. And then a year later, at this 1 year mark, we surveyed them a third time. And what we found is for artists, things are pretty bad for artists right now, but in comparison to our survey back in May, it is not as bad as they thought it would be about a year ago. However, like you mentioned before, 1 year into the pandemic now, 80% of the artists are still reporting a very negative or extremely negative impact on their art practice. I think probably one of the biggest thing that that struck me too as an artist myself is one in five artists, about 20%, still are not able to practice their art. And that's a significant amount for artists in the region who are still not able to be in their studio, not able to make the work that they do at this very moment.
You know, I mentioned in the opening, Kathy, that you found that nearly 60% say they had experienced a decline in their creative output.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How surprising is that?
I don't think that's very surprising at all. I think in the survey we did ask artists like what are their needs right now? What are something that they can help them get back into their practice? And a lot of artists did say there is still financial needs, there's need for studio spaces. But I think another one that kind of stood out is just the mental stress. I think there are, within the survey, we found artists do need mental support. They need the community. And just like restaurants, many fields in art and creativity relies on people getting together. And that is kind of slow at this moment to get back.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's interesting to me that so many said their creative output had declined because, you know, you might conclude that it might have increased because people were forced to spend more time at home and, you know, have more time to work, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really interesting point because another major survey data from this report is that we found out a third of the artists that we surveyed have found new employment during this time. Huh. When we surveyed the artists about a year ago, Only 4% mentioned that they found new employment, but within this 1 year of pandemic, a third of them has found new employment. So that, I think that kind of led us to surmise that as artists, so one of the things we learned too is that artists have lost multiple income streams. They have lost more than two income streams, many of them, throughout this pandemic. So many of them are pivoting, whether they're leaving their studio practice or leaving their area of expertise completely to find new jobs to supplement that this moment. I feel like I think that is a possibility, mm-hmm. looking at how many artists have taken on new employment. A third of the artists have taken on new employment in this last year.
Well, Kathy,
so that could be taking it away.
Right. Yeah. You're a painter. How has the pandemic affected your creativity?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that, Steve. It has been difficult. I think for me, I resonate with some of the artists that respond to the survey where mental stress was a huge one on me. Earlier on the pandemic, I did have a transition employment too. So I am one of the one third of artists who left an employment and started a new employment during this time. I do still have a practice. I do still have a studio in the Crossroads. But one of the things I experienced is my creative practice definitely has slowed. I don't have the same type of productivity as I was before the pandemic. Mm. And part of that is, I think as artists, we do need that bandwidth to be able to be in the studio and creating. And even though I am still making work, it feels a lot more sporadic in terms of there's like a significant moment that's happening. I feel like I'm compelled to go in the studio to make something, but the rest, I just feel it's hard to be in the studio at this moment for that reason.
It's interesting. What were you hoping to achieve with a survey like this?
With this survey, our goal is to be able to inform arts organizations and regional organizations, whether it's state art agencies and art services organizations in the Mid-America region, to give them this information, to provide services, provide resources for artists once they have these information in hand.
Well, for artists out there, if they want to call in and let us know how the pandemic has affected them, I'd like to hear from them. Our phone number, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. What's Artist Inc. going to do with this information, Kathy?
Yes. So this report is created by, in collaboration with Diane Scott, our arts assessment consultant, mm-hmm. and it's through the Mid-America Arts Alliance. And for us, with this information in hand, one of our goals is to disseminate. So we do want to get this information out to the Kansas State Art Agency, to the Missouri State Art Agency, to Texas, and all across the state. So they have this information in mind. I think this report will also help us in terms of creating grants, creating resources for artists and direct artists to resources that can help them as we move forward in this pandemic.
Can you take it to donors and say, look, our artistic community is hurting. Can you help?
Yes, for sure. So we are sharing this with donors and funders too. And I think that actually led to an interesting point in a survey too, because as we're looking at artists applying for grants, applying for assistance during this last year, about 42% of the artists actually did apply for relief, whether it's through arts-related relief grants that's provided by organizations such as Charlotte Street,
right.
Foundations and other national grant makers, versus also the federal assistance, like the PPP and the unemployment. So we're serving artists for that too and see if they're actually tapping into those assistance. And the survey was a little surprising for us. I think not as many artists applied for those assistance as we thought they would.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, reported. Yeah,
because I think there is so much need, but not a lot of artists actually did apply for those. In our survey, about 42% of artists applied for those assistance. And in that 42%, 28% of artists you applied for arts related grant. About half of them received those grants. So a lot of effort is being put into applying for those arts related grant versus there is a much smaller percentage of artists who actually did apply for the federal federal assistance. Yeah.
If you're
that was surprising to us.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the impact that the pandemic has had on our artistic community throughout the Midwest. My guest is Kathy Liao. She's a program specialist with Artist Inc. that works with artists on their professional development. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. I'd like to know what kind of financial hit you've taken if you're an artist working in the Kansas City area and how the pandemic has affected you. Well, let's talk about the financial hit that artists have taken here, Kathy, because maybe not surprisingly, three of four artists report negative or extremely negative impacts on their artistic practice. I guess that doesn't strike me as very surprising.
Yeah. According to our survey, I think 90% of the artists have lost income in this last year. And one of the things we also recognize that is artists usually do have multiple income sources, revenues, and six out of eight artists has lost more than two income. So whether that's from paying performance gigs or whether it's contracts or whatever that may be, but they have lost more than two sources of income in this last year.
You know, it's interesting to me because over the past few months, I've had a chance to talk to a few local gallery owners, and to a person, they told me that sales had been really strong during the pandemic as people were focusing on their homes and redecorating, that kind of thing. Now, we're talking about just one type of art here, you know, visual art, but nearly half of your respondents were in the visual arts. Is it fair to conclude that some artists have also done pretty well here?
I can't say from experience, for me, but I do. Yeah. I think there is an uptick in terms of sales of art from what you said about galleries, but I think a lot of artists at the same time, also has to pivot in sales to whether it's social media or online, if they don't have a gallery representation. And I think another way to think about this is, one of the surveys from the American for the Arts also noted that only about 19% of revenue is generated through the social media sales. So that's kind of like two different ways of of creating money.
I was going to say, if you're an artist and you don't have gallery representation and a pandemic is raging, how do you sell your work?
Yeah, so that kind of comes back to what I just mentioned about utilizing social media.
Right.
I think another interesting point is about in one of the surveys, we did note that 88% artistic product is now available through social media because of that pivot that needed to happen, that innovation that needed to happen as artists transition to in-person to virtual. And I also want to make a note that this pandemic has a huge impact on performing artists too. So whether it's musicians or dancers, performers who are not able to have a physical space in an audience. So that innovation also happens where people are pivoting to these digital spaces. And I think 42% of artists also think that this is fundamentally changing or permanently changing the way they're going to deliver their artwork. So
that's,
I think that's pretty interesting too.
Do you have any sense of what that, can you translate that for me? What, how it will change their practice and how they sell what they do?
Yeah.
Or do you,
I would love to, I would love to hear from other artists, but for me personally, I definitely have to kind of pivot to engagement through online, whether it's newsletters and direct contact with my patrons or with artists who, or collectors who do support me. And during this last year, I also had to reach out to using crowdfunding sources, such as Patreon, to get support for my work or to support me in my income stream. So I think there is a lot of artists looking to different platforms to get their work out there, for even in creating community. I feel like that's another major one where artists, there is a loss of community, whether it's just going to First Fridays or going to galleries and seeing other artists. I feel like there is that loss of community. So there is that, how do we create community virtually at this time too?
Is that hard for an artist to do, to go to a crowdfunding source to sort of generate income?
I do think maybe similar to what you mentioned about the gallery possibly bring more income through sales of artwork. I do think during this last year, there may be more success in crowdfunding at this point, because I think people, even though the pandemic is going on, I do also feel like there's a lot of people who are generous and who are finding ways to contribute and to donate to individuals, to artists during this time too.
You've already mentioned this next finding, but it's worth repeating, I think. Just one in five artists, about 20% of all the artists out there who responded to your survey, said they were unable to practice their art during the pandemic. Again, that's a big chunk of the artistic community.
Yeah.
Pretty depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is so significant. And I feel like that is also kind of taking into consideration, again, of artists who are musicians and performers, and just thinking about tours and concerts, all that has been canceled this last year, and having to find, again, like a new employment or a different way to generate income during this time, and not being able to produce the work, whether it's for the lack of space or for the lack of financial support or having to take on new employment. Again, for me, that is so significant, recognizing that there is a decrease in being able to practice their art, and that shift to taking on new employment during this time. And it does make you wonder how many of them will return to their previous employment,
right,
or the way previous way they're making their work.
You also mentioned that, you know, the impact on visual artists might be one thing, but for performing artists, you got to begin to conclude that the impact there was significantly tougher than what the visual artists endured. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. Admittedly, I feel like the survey that we put out, there's not a significant representation of performance and musicians in our survey, but I do believe there's a significant impact on that industry.
This was interesting to me, and again, you've mentioned this. This is a little bit counterintuitive now, but fewer artists said they needed support than early in the pandemic. In May last year, 80% of artists were saying they needed financial help. Now only 4 in 10 artists said that. Kathy, you mentioned that earlier. Is the conclusion there the easy one here, that artists have simply found other ways to make a living?
I think that's a big one. Again, it's reflected in that a third of artists have found new employment. I also think that artists inherently are just more resourceful. I do think, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing here is that this finding comes even though 9 in 10 artists said they had lost income because of the pandemic, and most expect future income loss. You've also got to conclude that most artists are pretty flexible in how they make their money. You know, they're really working hard to find new ways to figure it out.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think that is so true. There is a lot of anticipated future income loss. Like I mentioned at the top of the hour, I think there is a negative perception of whether an artistic career is tenable right now.
Yeah, right.
And there's also the perception that they'll lose income going forward in the future. The interesting thing in the survey that we did note is artists are anticipating a loss of income going into the future, but it gets better in late 2021 going to 2022. The two data point that stood out that is the opposite of that trend is in arts related employment and in higher education employment. So I think there is a perception that going into 2022, those those employments or those job opportunities are going to continue to decrease. So we find that that data to me is really, really fascinating, but it's also something I can relate to. Mm-hmm. I was in the higher ed, I was an academic before the pandemic, and I'm no longer employed at a university. And I feel like these larger institutions, whether it's nonprofit arts institutions or higher educations, they're definitely moving at a slower trend. So I think there's more uncertainty mm-hmm. in the future as the pandemic hits these larger institutions, and then possibly more layoffs or furloughs to come in the future.
I'm just anecdotally, did you hear about any adjustments or modifications that artists made in their practices as a result of the pandemic? What kind of survival stories have come across your desk?
I would love to have individual artists come and share their stories at this point. But having worked with many artists during this pandemic, Mid-America Arts Alliance and our team has worked with multiple project grants with artists. And in this last year, we have heard how artists either had to completely stop or drop the project they're working with, whether it's because it's community-based or they have a lot of interface with audiences, and that's just not possible anymore. And in more recent months, a lot of artists also have kind of come to. So let me kind of backtrack a little bit. It's interesting to see artists back in May of last year just recognizing that, hey, the pandemic's happening and either I have to stop what I'm doing because it's not attainable anymore,
right,
or I have to kind of rethink of how things are done. But now I think around about January and February, in speaking to some of these artists again, it's interesting to see that mental shift of recognizing that the pandemic is here to stay. So how do we change? How do we find new ways of making these projects possible rather than kind of being stuck and like, this is not possible anymore? So it's interesting to see that mental shift. And I feel like this might be something everyone is experiencing, where there is that recognition of like, okay, this is here to stay for a while. So how do we pivot and how do we transition at this moment?
How is your organization, Artist Inc., how is it able to respond to this crisis and help artists?
So my organization, Artist Inc., is part of the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and we are a regional arts organization. And so Mid-America Arts Alliance have been channeling the CARES Act grant to artists and artist organizations around the region to support them. And I think as we're looking at, coming back to the data again, as we're looking at the data, I think another thing that really stood out to us is how do these artists know that they have access to these resources? Mm-hmm. And so I think going forward, it is also important to provide the education and provide workshops so these artists know that they can access these resources that is there for them.
We go to a call here. Priscilla from Lawrence. Priscilla, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning, and hi, Kathy.
Hi, Priscilla.
To Artist Inc., I've been able to shift. What the pandemic has made me realize is how nimble we have to be. So I'm a storyteller. I'm a professional storyteller. All my work vanished last year.
Wow.
All of it gone. Boom. But it all went online. And So I do a daily story time every weekday. I do a Patreon bedtime stories thing. I've been telling stories in Mumbai and Singapore and
wow,
all over the place because we just have to be nimble.
How has your income been affected by the pandemic, Priscilla?
It went way down, but I did apply for a PPP loan, and I did get it, and I got it forgiven. So that was very helpful. And then it started to come back up because people started to actually hire me to do virtual shows.
Wow. Wow.
So it's still below what it was the year before, but it's not too far below. And it's coming back.
Oh, good for you. Well, that's a great story. I guess, Kathy, that's the kind of resiliency we've been talking about here that so many artists have had to show here.
Yes, Steve. Yeah. Thank you, Priscilla, for sharing that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the survey again was conducted by Artist Inc. The guest was Kathy Liao, program specialist with Artist Inc. Is that survey available on your website, Kathy?
Yes, it is. And we do have surveys also from the American for the Arts. And so we have also have a national survey that we can share. It is on our website at maaa.org. And you can also find out more about Artist Inc. at artistinc.art.
Sounds good. Kathy, thanks so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks for having me.
After a short break, we'll be coming back to talk about the Academy Awards on Sunday night and who's going to win the big awards. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. With the pandemic still a major concern across the globe, the motion picture industry remains stuck in an identity crisis. Are the movies still safely at the center of American culture? Is anyone even going to watch the Academy Awards on Sunday night? Hollywood hasn't helped matters. It's held back some of its major releases for a time when theaters are open again. But what if, some may wonder, those theaters don't ever reopen? And for so many years, of course, Hollywood remained a bastion of white male actors and directors. The motion picture industry clearly is in crisis. With us here to talk about this are our film critics today. They are Steve Walker. Steve, nice to have you.
Nice to be back, Steve.
Beck Ireland's also joining us today. Beck, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners, are you going to watch the Academy Awards Sunday night? How many of the Best Picture nominees have you seen? We're wondering all this as the motion picture industry goes through a profound identity crisis. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, award shows don't appear to have the same sizzle as they once had, Steve. Ratings for the Grammys were off by 53% this year. The Golden Globes dropped by 60%. What's going on out there?
Well, I think what's going on is that so many movies weren't opening on screens. And if people were having, people had to see movies on streaming services, if they had streaming services. I think I'm a little more excited about the Oscars now than I was two hours ago after seeing a piece on the Today Show this morning that it's going to be as live as possible, much more live presenters and winners than previous award shows. We all recall the Golden Globes got off to a disastrous start when the first winner, Daniel Kaluuya's voice wasn't coming across his feed.
Yeah.
And it was an S show, if you know what I mean.
Well, Beck, that just leads to my next point here. I mean, some people have said the Oscars have become too polished, too predictable over the years. It sounds like, based on what Steve is saying, they're trying to address that this year. But is that a fair criticism?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about the Oscars, you're sort of talking about two separate things. So there's the movies that they're celebrating, and then there's like the Oscars ceremony. So it just depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about the ceremony,
right?
I think it's more of like a collective experience. People like, you know, dress up and actually go to have Oscar parties. So obviously that's not really happening this year. But I think the Oscars themselves, for the movies, I think this is one of the most exciting years in a really, really long time.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think it is because of the pandemic that a lot of the bigger movies, the bigger directors, you know, are holding off on their releases because they want the box office. And so some smaller ones have seemed to squeak in there.
And as a result, Beck, I gather that the nominees, there's a lot more diversity is what I read this year than there have been in previous years.
Yeah. And it's not even just like the ethnic backgrounds of the people. It seems to be sort of the types of movies also. That have gotten nominated. So, you know, there's some that are, you know, your standard Oscar fare, but then there's a few surprises.
You know, the other thing, Steve Walker, you hear about the Oscars and the Academy Awards ceremony itself is that there's been a whole lot of talk from the winners about their progressive politics and a lot of pontificating from the stage, if you will. For some folks, that's gotten a little bit old. And I read one analysis that said the ratings plummet when the stars start opining about politics. Has it gone overboard?
I think it did for a while. I don't recall seeing in the last couple years anything close to that. The most political thing I recall of recent years is Frances McDormand when she won for Three Billboards.
Right.
And she talked about the inclusion clause that she is demanding in her contracts, which means that at least half of your staff has to be female or people of color. You know, that certainly wasn't a turnoff. And here we are, you know, 3 or 4 years later, 9 of the 20 acting nominees are people of color. 2 of the director nominees are women. And that's the first time that's happened in either of those cases.
There's one movie that is getting quite a few nods that the entire production crew is African-American. So,
huh. Yeah. What film was that, Beck?
That's the, sorry, all my notes.
Is it Judas and the Black Messiah?
Yes, Judas and the Black Messiah, the one about Fred Hampton. Yep.
Well, the other thing, Beck, you wonder about, I mean, is the world too full of awards programs? Because one count I saw, there are 18 award ceremonies now each year. That's a lot of people congratulating themselves.
I am so happy you asked me this because I am not actually a really big fan of the Oscars. Being world film and independent, I prefer either the Independent Film Award, Film Awards, or, you know, the BAFTAs, the British ones too. And I on one hand, I think you're correct in saying that that is a lot. But on the other hand, I think some of these are really great ways to seek out movies that you wouldn't normally do. So for the Oscars, I tend to stick with the foreign language films, and then the shorts, and, you know, unfortunately, this year, usually, you know, one of our art houses usually has the shorts, you know, that you can go see.
I love the shorts.
So you have to kind of, yeah, you have to go find them online. You know, so I think the awards are a great way to seek out movies that you wouldn't normally have heard of.
Steve, I've been looking for the shorts online. I know they've been out there in a couple spots, but it's been tough to find.
Well, the Tivoli and the Fine Arts, I believe, offered them through their virtual cinema.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I know that 3 of the short documentaries are available at the New York Times website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was guilty of what Beck just described. You know, I got the list and I would just go seek them out and Google them, the titles, and there they would pop up.
Huh. Well, one more thing about the lack of interest in these shows. There's a woman named Janine Bassinger. She's founder of Wesleyan University's Film Studies Department. She's written a bunch of books on Hollywood history. And she just told the New York Times that her interest had waned in the Academy Awards. She said this, "When I find myself having a hard time caring, that's a problem." Steve, has your interest waned at all?
It had started to. Because of the number of award shows, it just got repetitive. But the Independent Spirit Awards, which were aired last night, I haven't watched the whole show yet, but it had some surprise winners. So did the BAFTAs, which is now being aired on the BBC America channel.
Yeah.
So I think there's this year's crew. There's a couple that are pretty 99% sure who's going to win. And then there's some categories that are open. And that's always been the fun part of the Oscars for me.
Well, Kate Marshall,
I think it's hard when, you know, you hear about the same movies over and over again. So for me, last year's Parasite win really, you kind of increased my interest in the Oscars now. I wonder, you know, maybe they got some new, you know, they did get some new blood into the Academy. So, you know, who knows what will happen this year? I'm excited to see.
Well, Andrew just emailed us about my point about the politics that get played out in these ceremonies. Andrew writes, "The reason people have stopped watching these shows is because the host and awardees have gone from amusing stories and thanks to political activism and wokeness. This simply turns off most of the audience. They want some escapism, not politics." Kate Marshall writes, "Could it be this year's crop of nominees and who has seen any of them?" And I read that the viewership of many of these movies is way, way down from past years. What am I looking at here? That last year, there traditionally has, you know, these nominees, nominated movies get a bump in ticket sales. Parasite last year was an example of that. But this year, I read if you take all eight of the Best Picture nominees and combine their earnings, the total comes to barely $35 million worldwide. That would be an unimpressive number for just one nominee in a normal year, Steve.
Well, yes, and that's the pandemic. I mean, that's the reason, because theaters weren't open. New York City just started opening theaters again about a month ago. And that's really too bad, that because I'm looking at the nominees now for Best Picture, and there's some really good movies on this list.
We've talked on this program before, Beck, about whether the movie industry is going to survive this pandemic. What are your latest thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, the movie industry has survived a lot of things in its history. I think the pandemic will be another thing. It might just be another, you know, we find other ways to see movies. I'm really missing that experience of seeing movies, you know, with an audience also. You know, it's just not the same at home. I know a lot of people like the comfort of it. But it does seem to be that like series and TV shows are what people are watching during the pandemic and not the movies. But, you know, maybe if we start championing these little great gems, you know, in the indie film industry can come back. That's always my hope, because that's where my heart is. So,
you know, Steve, your colleague, your partner on these film critic shows usually is Cindy Haynes, and she's been very skeptical about the future of the film industry. I think that's fair to say. Where are you coming down on that right now?
Well, I think the first analogy that comes to mind is our baseball stadiums. And I'm not a sports guy, but you see how gradually more and more people are getting vaccinated and more people are allowed to gather in places. I think the reopening of theaters in a somewhat regular, normal capacity is still a ways off, but you know, you're going to see little increases in the 25% here, and then maybe in a couple months, 45-50%. I'm like Beck. I don't think theaters are going to die.
Mm-hmm. What about the impact, Steve, on diversity of this year's films? NPR film critic Bob Bondello had a story about the industry just recently, pointing out that, again, while it's been a catastrophic year for the industry at the box office, it's been a banner year for diversity at the Oscars. What have you noticed on that front?
That exact same thing. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, when 9 of 20 acting nominees are people of color, you know, the Oscars so white hashtag that was trending for so many years, you can't say that this year.
Yeah. Well, let's run down your picks for the top honors at this year's Academy Awards, airing Sunday night. Let's listen to a little clip here. This is Anthony Hopkins, nominated for his portrayal as the title character in The Father.
Your whiskey.
Thank you.
Cheers. Oh. Do you know, I'd give everything I own for a glass of whiskey, don't you agree?
Well, I don't own all that much, so.
Oh, really? What do you do for a living?
I look after other people.
Other people?
Yeah, my job is to help people who need help.
Oh. Sounds like one of those girls you're always trying to dump off a maid here. Must be a different job, though, isn't it? I mean, spending all day with one of those. Ugh, I mean, I couldn't stand it. Am I right? I
didn't mind as well. What about you? What did you do for a living?
Oh, I was a dancer.
Were you?
Yes.
Dad?
What?
You're an engineer.
What do you know about it? Yes, tap dancing was my specialty.
Really?
You seem surprised.
Yeah, a little bit.
Why, don't you believe me? Or you find that difficult to imagine?
Of course, it's just I've always loved tap dancing.
You really? Wow, I'm still great at it. I'll show you. Aye! Jolly good. Why are you laughing?
Sorry.
I know. She reminds me of.
Who?
It's Lucy. Lucy when she was younger.
Lucy?
Yeah, my other daughter. That's right. There's a resemblance, don't you think?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yes. Her unbearable habit of laughing inanely. I had you there, didn't I?
That's Anthony Hopkins in The Father. Beck, I'm wondering, there's a whole slew of terrific actors in this category. Where are you going here in terms of what you think? Who's going to win the Best Actor award?
Certainly Hopkins there. I mean, that scene, out of context even, it's still just amazing, just how he flips. And that whole the whole movie and his sort of mastery of it, of him not knowing where he is or, you know, things like that. So I think I'm rooting for Hopkins among this this list. But also there's the Korean, you know, the immigration tale, the Minari too. So so I'm sort of torn on that.
Steve Walker, I think the odds-on favorite, if I understand correctly, is Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
That's been the trend. I think it's a supporting role, personally. And I understand it's a tribute to the late actor. But my choice would be Riz Ahmed in Sound of Metal.
Sound of Metal.
He's the first Muslim actor to be nominated for Best Actor. He plays a punk band drummer who goes deaf. It's an amazing performance.
Couldn't agree more.
It gave
more.
Me chills when I was watching it.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, just a really powerful performance. But do you think he's going to win it, though?
Riz Ahmed? No,
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, let's move on to the Best Actress Award. We're going to hear a clip here from featuring Carey Mulligan, who was nominated for actress in a leading role for the film Promising Young Woman.
Daisy.
That's me.
Dean Walker. Please sit.
My assistant says that you are interested in resuming med school.
That's right.
May I ask what prompted your desire to get back to your studies?
I guess I couldn't stop thinking about my time here.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary place. It's an unusual request.
Yes, but I left under unusual circumstances.
Oh.
I left because of what happened to Nina. Nina Fisher. You don't remember her?
Maybe you remember Alexander Monroe?
Oh, yes, Alexander Monroe. He actually just came back and gave a talk here. Oh, he's a really nice guy, really smart. Are you a friend of his?
No. So you don't remember the accusations made against Al Monroe?
I don't.
He took a girl, Nina Fisher. The one you don't remember, back to his room where he had sex with her repeatedly and in front of his friends while she was too drunk to have any idea what was going on. She was covered in bruises the next day. Handprints, I guess you could say.
Was it reported?
Yes.
Do you know who Nina spoke to?
You.
Wow. That's Carey.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
Great scene. Carey Mulligan in Promising Young Woman. Steve Walker, of all the films that are out this year, I'm surprised there's not more buzz around Promising Young Woman. It's a really remarkable film. You know, it features Carey Mulligan sort of fighting sexual predators and sort of taking revenge on them. And it's a film that you think would spark conversation and talk and a little controversy. There hasn't been a lot of buzz about it.
I think in a normal year there would be, Steve. I agree with you. It's a tough movie.
It is
hard to watch. Mulligan is extraordinary, and she would be my pick for Best Actress.
And this category, Steve, is loaded, right? Andra Day, Viola Davis, Frances McDormand. We're talking a lot of really top-line actresses here.
Yes, right. The competition is stiff. I think this is the most unpredictable category we're going to see on the Sunday night.
Beck
and
Ireland.
Honestly, there could have been like 10 nominees here because there were several movies with women in the lead that were also just taking from the Independent Spirit Awards. You know, Julia Garner in The Assistant, you know, sort of the lower key version of Promising Young Woman, where, you know, it's this woman who's the assistant to a very, you know, famous unnamed producer, movie producer, and the things that she is expected to do and witnesses. Hmm. So, yeah, there's her. And then there's also Nicole Beharie for Miss Juneteenth. You know, they could have easily made this list also.
Beck, why do you think Promising Young Woman hasn't gotten more people talking and more people viewing it?
I think it was just hard to get it's hard to get people to watch unpleasant things. So, you know, to say that it's like a rape revenge movie, it's almost in a horror category. You know, so I just think it's, you know, since it's difficult subject matter in a time when, you know, people sort of want escapism. So,
well, this category, any number of these actresses have gotten a lot of attention. Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. If she wins this, doesn't she complete the clean sweep of all the top acting awards that you can win? Andra Day for her role in the Billie Holiday movie. Frances McDormand, of course, in Nomadland. I mean, where do you go with that? Who do you think is going to win this thing, Beck?
I don't know. I think possibly Frances McDormand. I would say that probably my money is on her for Nomadland.
That would probably be the betting line there, I think, given the amount of tension she's gotten for that scene. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to the director category. We're going to play a clip here from Nomadland, again, featuring Frances McDormand. She's one of two women. Chloe Zhao is one of two women nominated for Best Director here.
Okay, what we've got is parts and labor, $2,300 and tax.
I just looked up the value on your van. With that high a mileage, you're looking about $5,000 at the most.
I'd probably recommend taking that money and putting it towards a different vehicle.
Yeah, no, well, I can't do that. I can't do that, see, because, all right, I spent a lot of time and money building the inside out, and a lot of people don't understand the value of that, but it's not something like you can... I live in there. It's my home.
Wow. This movie, of course, featuring real-life people showing up as actors and actresses in this movie here. Steve Walker, who's going to carry the Best Director award here?
I think Chloe Zhao, who directed Nomadland. She seems to have won everything else, and so the wave is in her favor at this point, which would be really thrilling. It's a shocking shame that only Catherine Bigelow's been the only woman in, what, 90 years to win a Best Director Oscar. It's shameful.
Beck, who do you think wins this?
I'm good with all of them except David Fincher. So I'm going against
David Fincher from Mank. Yeah.
From Mank. I just feel like it was sort of full of tricks. You know, he wanted to make this movie based on Citizen Kane, and he added the fake, real change marks and everything. And it just doesn't really work. So
yeah, it's very everyone busy. Else, I agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to mention Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. So she was an actress. People may know her from Call the Midwife. She's Patsy, a really popular show on PBS. And she started working, behind the scenes, and this is her first major feature. So, I'm sort of pulling for her. She's sort of an underdog on it. So,
right.
Yeah.
And people would know her too from The Crown. She played Camilla Parker Bowles as a young woman.
Oh, that's right.
On the recent two seasons of The Crown.
Well, let's get to the best. Yep. Let me get to the Best Picture nominee here. We're going to hear a clip from the trial of the Chicago 7.
I, Bobby G. Seale, have a motion pro se to defend myself. I'd like to invoke the precedent of Adams versus U.S. ex rel McCann, where the Supreme Court.
All right, that's enough. Where are you learning these things? Does your young friend, Mr. Hampton, have a background in law?
Your Honor, the other defendants would like to join in Mr. Seale's motion.
Are you now speaking on behalf of Mr. Seale?
No, Your Honor, I'm speaking on behalf of the other defendants.
You're standing right next to him. Why don't you just represent him?
Because I'm not his lawyer, sir. If I understand, Mr. Seal, this last month and a half, and I believe I have, he is not represented by counsel.
Overruled.
I am being denied right
Mr.
now.
Mr. Seal.
My constitutional
will you be
right
quiet?
For
will
legal
you,
representation.
Will you be quiet? You have lawyers to speak for you.
No, he doesn't.
Well, that's my pick for Best Picture. Steve Walker, we
is
just have
really?
A few seconds. Yeah, what's your pick?
Nomadland was my favorite film.
Yeah, you
the
really
most
rate about it. How about you, Beck?
Beautifully shot.
I'm torn between The Father and Promising Young Woman. I do think Nomadland is probably going to win, though.
Okay. We're going to leave it there. That's our rundown of what's going to happen on Sunday night. You don't even have to watch the show now. You know who's going to win. Steve Walker, thanks for your time. Appreciate it, as always.
I'm never right.
You're welcome.
Beck, appreciate your time, too. Beck Ireland. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. You've been listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Have a great weekend, all. We'll see you Monday.